What's up, man?
Man, just pumped up again. Another day, another finals game coming up. I guess tomorrow. Ah, one day off. But
we'll take
I'm used to the every other day format, but now it's going to be Sunday. But obviously, dude, we're in draft mode right now. June 3rd, looking at, 19 days to the draft or something like that? And so we're kind of taking a step back evaluation and saying, like, who are we hearing rumors about from the combine?
Yeah.
And you brought up a name today. We started digging in. I think we both got pretty excited. So tell me about Jalen Hood-Schifino.
All right, man. I'm so glad you pronounced his name because I seriously had issues trying to put that together. And as we all know, I can't even send Taylor or Tyler right. So Schifino was a pretty baller prospect, or is a pretty baller prospect, in my opinion. Now, the combine, let me go ahead and pull up his combine stats because they're very different from what we're hearing.
I'm going to give you a name real quick. This year's Tyler Halliburton.
You know what? I think you're right. I think that the way that he scores and the way his shot is, it reminds me a lot of Jordan Poole shooting. So there's obviously proof that, that type of shot can have success in the league.
Tyrese Halliburton. I'm sorry. I was like, I knew I said that wrong.
So he's 6'4 and a half without shoes on. So, I mean, I guess he could be 6'5 and a half with shoes on.
I've seen him listed at 6'6".
That's around right. Right. He has a 6'10 and a half wingspan. I feel like that's pretty nice to see right there. He has a 9-inch hand. Not necessarily elite, but it is a big hand. Big hand. You know what? He's proven to be able to win championships in high school. He won back-to-back championships in high school, national championships. He's just a really good baller. I like the fact that his size, his strength, all those things line up for him to be able to be what I would consider an elite point guard in the league with pick and rolls. What he is able to do off pick and rolls is truly spectacular.
Schifino. I said it right. Schifino. Damn it.
Schifino. Schifino.
Damn it. Schifino. Dude, I had it right. I had heard somebody say it right, and then I fucked it up. But okay, so I'm sorry to cut you off. I just wanted to, to make it clear. This guy from Indiana, 19-year-old, is going to be a baller. Now,
oh yes.
Think about it with Tyrese Halliburton. He went to the Kings and he proved he could ball. You know, and he ended up getting a pretty good trade for me. I think for him to go to Indiana is a better situation. Although, the value he got with Sabonis was able to push, obviously, the Kings up, into Corey? The playoffs. But here's my thing, bro. Do you think that he's going to be able to make an impact as a rookie? Or do you think it's going to take a couple of years for him to come on?
It depends on what team he goes to, man. Like, just to be honest, like, if he's coming to the Thunder, and again, if we're thinking that he's going to crack the top 10 players, then I don't see it happening right now. I don't see a lot of these rookie kids, young men, cracking the top 10 players. I just, unless we trade up, which, again, I still think is probably the best possibility at this moment is us trading up. And getting either a second pick or even a better pick than what we have now. And the reason I say that is because there's so many guys that I think that could actually have an impact right away on this team, especially with just hearing news that Poku broke his arm. So there's things like that we need to be able to start thinking about. And it's not this is not a knock on Poku, but now that he's had two what I would consider serious injuries back to back, you got to start thinking about somebody else that can get in that position, and whether that's going out and replacing it with the free agency or a trade to get a big man there, or it's addressing it through the NBA draft. And I think there's players on this draft board that could help us tremendously, but I don't think that we necessarily need to trade up for those players. But I do think it would be healthy if we traded up to get a better power forward that we could pick up for this team.
So,
but the reality is, it's just hard.
Let's talk a little bit more about Jalen.
Oh, I will never give up on Poku. I'm just saying, when you have back-to-back injuries like this, you can't count on a player to play 65 games. You need to start looking at, is playing this much going to hinder his career? So you just got to look for another big man to be able to release that type of pressure for him to play 25 minutes a game.
So we're talking about another Jalen Hood-Schifrino. I think I said it wrong, but I tried my best. But let's talk about his strengths offensively. He has the ability to really attack the perimeter. I didn't get too deep into how much he, you know, attacks the hole. But in college, it can be really hard to tell because the defenses that you see, they're very different than what you'd see in the NBA. But he does attack the perimeter like a modern NBA guard. And he keeps teams in a spot where they need to put somebody long and lanky and who can defend him, you know, all over the court.
Right.
You can't play off of him. And I think that's something where you look at and you're like going to be wondering, how long will it take for him to be able to make a maximum impact? Well, does he come in and shoot 40% right away? I know that's hard for everybody because there's less space in the NBA, but certain players are capable of doing that. And if he can do that, then he's going to make an impact right away, no matter which team he plays for. And I see the fundamentals there. I think a good example for us, now he's a bad example because he's a known player. He's going to get drafted. It's not the same thing. But Isaiah Joe, the way that like he creates such a threat like all over the court. And if you lose track of Isaiah Joe, he's going to shoot the ball. And I just feel like Jalen Hood-Schifrino is a very similar threat. Now, free versus picking, you know, using your pick, like you're saying, there might be better value. But between Chet and Poku, I feel like you're going to get a whole year's worth of play out of those two guys.
Sure.
Now, granted, we don't know. But that might be a stretch. But in the end, I don't know that we need to solve a problem with Chet on the way back.
No. And we got J. Will. We got JRE. And if you look at Jalen Schifrino and the way that Hood-Schifrino, if you look at the way that he plays on offense and the way that he uses screens, you see JRE and J. Will fitting right in with this young man. And not only that, but you have – okay, our offense is designed where, you know, you have Giddey bring up the ball. You know, you have Shea go to his proverbial wing, which is the right side, and he loves to go left, drive left with his left hand. And then the right side is, or the left side is Dort, right?
So, Dort on the left side. And here's
mid-range. This actually fits in our offense incredibly well. Like, he would seamlessly fit into this offense because of, you don't have to move players around. Like, we have players that prefer to go left sometimes. And when you have a guy that's on the left side that's preferring to go left, he's going to where? The baseline, right? So, to me, I look at him and I say, Schifrino, and I say, if our offense is in the best flow, he prefers to be on the left side, driving right towards the middle of the lane. It creates our offense, keeps on going. We don't have to think about where next player is going because he already knows, and this is what he does. And I like the way that he would fit into our offense. And I think that would be one of the more seamlessly fits into the offense than we've seen in a while for you know, NBA player or a college player coming into the NBA.
Right. And there is some question about his height. Will he be able to get his shot off smooth? So then you have to take your time and look at the mechanics and like look at his release point. And
I watch the feet, man.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing about this is that, especially with Jalen, is you have to get to a spot that's open. Like, his shot isn't particularly fast. He doesn't have a fast shot. So he has to get open with his feet. And he in college, it was like, it was easy for him. Like, he knew where he was going. He was going to get there and he was going to release. And his footwork was so fast and so elite. Like, his slower shot didn't matter. And that's just, it's impressive to see.
Do you think it's slower? Because I didn't get that impression personally.
I think when he's focusing on getting squared up, yes. To me, there's many different ways that he would shoot the ball, which I like. I like to see different releases. But I like to see a body get squared up. I like to see what he can do to get squared up and how quickly they can get squared up. Now, the Oklahoma offense, where, you know, the Thunder are running and it's about square up quickly, boom, boom, boom. You know, we've seen Dort shot get really, really fast and quicker. So I'm not concerned. That's one of the reasons I'm not sitting here saying, oh, this is a bad stat. I'm not concerned because the second if he got into our, you know, gym, that shot and getting set shot is going to go really quickly. And that's why I look at him and I say, like, there's too many positives for this young man to get stuck on a, you know, couple, you know, slight things that are infractions that he can work on once he gets to his new NBA team.
No, admittedly, there are some players that we have not covered in probably the consensus top three, and then additionally the Thompson twins. We haven't gone through those. So about five players. Cam Whitmore is another one we haven't covered in the top half of the draft. We're focusing middle of the lottery, late lottery, where the Thunder kind of lies and trying to figure this out. So I'm not saying we've covered everybody.
Yeah, Unk.
But is he the best three-point shooter that we've covered?
I think the way that he is able to create that shot because mm-hmm. of his footwork, I think is you have to, you know, say he can be a setup shooter. He can be a quick release off of the screen shooter. He can come off the screen and he can get his feet set and his shoulder set and still be able to get that shot off in a powerful way. Like, he's a 19-year-old kid that has a lot of strength. Him to be able to pull some of these shots off, it takes a lot of strength to be able to do so. And I get excited about a player like this. I wouldn't call him the best three-point shooter in this draft. Right. I would say that he has the most tools to get an open three-point shot out of anybody because he utilizes that pick and roll and that pick and screen and pick and pop so well that
right.
It's he has so many tools to be able to fit in and an NBA team and be ready.
That's similar in, I think, a lot of ways to Tyrese Haliburton. Like, nobody was like saying, oh, this guy's the best shooter of his draft. But his understanding of how to get to his shots and when to get to his shots. And
getting to that right side, into that middle, and pulling up. There's not a better player in the college basketball or maybe this draft that knows where he's going, gets there, pulls up, nothing but net.
And for a team, like, I don't think it's a terrible situation to find yourself where you're in a spot with, like, Landry Shamet. But that would be, like, for me, the low end. Now, obviously, there's a much lower end of, like, failed shooters who don't make it in the NBA.
Man, he's more like, who was that? J.R. Smith, man.
Oh, you really?
Know, like, when I know people will be like, that's a horrible comp to him, but, like, the way that J.R. Smith was able to score and get to that spot and then rise above and release, mm-hmm. like, that was always, to me, like, was so impressive about his college and his early years in the NBA. Like, I always thought that J.R. Smith had an, you know, spectacular, like, potential. Mm-hmm. But I look at him and I say, you know, I think about J.R. Smith, I'm the right guy, right? We're the guy that with LeBron that won championships.
Yeah, and he started out, I think, okay, back when he was with the Hornets.
I was just making sure I'm saying the right player.
The Hornets were in Oklahoma City. So we got to see him play when he was on the bench with Byron Scott and Chris Paul was on the team. And here's the thing about
and the way that he rolls off of screens, the way that he is able to create off of the pick and rolls and the pick and screens, because that was J.R. Smith's game.
So
like, he had a good center.
Like,
he was better.
What was, as they say in the military, what was J.R. Smith's major malfunction? His major malfunction was his inability to know when to take a shot, right? And he would hit a shot and he'd think he was getting ready to shoot. He was like, okay, now I got to take heat check, right? He was taking heat checks before he got hot. He was out there and it was always like he had unlimited potential, it seemed like. He could have been like the next great, you know, American basketball player, really, because of his leaping ability, his ability to shoot the ball, but he just did not know when to shoot. And so it created this conflict between him and coaches where it was just like,
dude, you just have to listen to LeBron or anybody that played with J.R. Smith to understand how talented of a player he was.
Back to his major malfunction, I don't think that Jalen Hood, you said it right the last time, but I can't.
Shafino.
I don't think he has that same problem. I don't think he has that glitch in his programming.
No, but when I say I see a player that, like, J.R. Smith used those screens.
I'm not challenging you.
Like,
I'm agreeing. I'm just saying, like, you can compare somebody's game without saying, like, they are just going to go out and jack up shots at the wrong time. Because I think in that way he's more like Tyrese Haliburton, but his shot making, his understanding, like, that does look a little bit more like J.R. Smith. There's
so many guards.
You mentioned Jordan Poole as someone that his
but
shot.
But again, Jordan Poole has is another player that uses screens.
Right.
He comes off of screens. He like these are the players that I see that are impactful in the game because they are knowledgeable to say, there's a screen over there, and that screen isn't necessarily for me, but I'm going to go use that screen. Right. Mm-hmm. And that to me is a high IQ move because you're directing the traffic inside of that offense. And I saw Jalen do that so many times. I've seen J.R. Smith do that so many times. I've seen, you know, these other players that I look at and saying, okay, like these guys can do it. Like these guys have the ability to impact the game by hitting shots, driving to the hole, pulling up, and using screens effectively.
Right.
And people will say that's weird stuff, but listen, it's not comparing a player. It's comparing what his ability is able to do off the screens. And that's when I say Jalen has that impact in the game like that.
You know, growing up, I thought J.J. Redick would make an immediate impact in the NBA. And looking back, it was clear that he was going to have trouble transitioning his game because he was dependent on his teammates to get him open. And so when you see a player who is completely dependent on – you know, plays or screens or being able to run off of pin downs and just like constantly be moving to get open, you wonder if they're going to get that same type of attention within the NBA offense. And then you see players who understand how to get their shot. There's about four ways I can think of right now off the top of my head that players get to three-point shots at the end of shot clocks or within the offense. And there's really not a lot more. Like, you need to be able to shoot that step back. You need to be able to come off screens. You need to be able to know like when you can shoot these different types of shots, how to get to them. And in those situations, not necessarily the guy who wins the Trey Mann three-point contest in practice is the one who knows how to get to their shot and shoot a high percentage of those shots in games. You know what I mean? It's not NBA games aren't a three-point contest. You have defense, and you have to understand how to get to your shot and stay on balance and shoot your best shot. And that way, I feel like, this guy is...
It's the playmaking ability and IQ to go with it.
So you said he was moving up so far up draft boards. I had him listed on the draft pages I'm seeing like around 25. Now, you mentioned he might be all the way up into the top 10, which would make him in play to either be somebody that we pick... Or if he bumps somebody out of the top 12 or top 11, so they fall to the 12 spot. What do you think is more likely? He breaks it.
I've been saying that there's players that we're not even talking about that are going to end up in the top 12 that are going to bump these other players out that are surprises for people. But when there's been a shift in the NBA as much as there has been, we don't know what teams are valuing over what right now. And that's when I say that there's going to be some teams that are going to be sitting there and going to be like, well, I would rather this player than this player. And, you know, we could see one of the Thompson twins be available at 12. You know, we could see Hendricks be available at 12, which is mind-boggling. Like, I can't even describe, like, there's so many players that could be available at 12 with us because of players Bilal. You know, like, these guys move up in the draft and all of a sudden you're like, how did Leonard Miller get up there? How did this player get up there? How did this player get up there? It's because all of a sudden people are valuing other things. And if that's the case, we could just be sitting back and just hanging out.
What's up, Stay Daffy? And Unk, I think as far as one or two picks, I think we're keeping all three. I think if we do trade one, I could see maybe us packaging the later picks to move up a little bit. But
yeah,
I don't think... will consolidate into a single pick. I think it's, you know, my bet is we keep all three. And Stay Daffy, like Case and Wallace, I mean, I agree. We do need to consider backup point guard. Backup point guard is something that has been a weakness of our teams for years. I just kind of doubt that we're going to, like, suddenly start making backup point guard a priority. Who knows? Sam Presti may have changed his mind from all those Samaj Christian years and bringing in Derek... Fisher to try to shore things up, but I kind of think like that's probably how life of the backup point guard is going to be for the Thunder for a while.
Yeah, man, and it has to be the position that this Thunder team is in is that, are we wanting to get guards? Are we wanting to get a big man? Because, you know, we have guys talking about Blake Lively here, or Derek Lively, Blake Lively, Blake Derek Lively. I'd much rather talk about Blake than Derek, I'll be honest with you.
Why? You like Blake Lively?
But, you know, I like Derek Lively. But here's the thing. He's going to be available at 18 or 20. So for us to go for him at 12, I feel like would be a huge stretch. So I would rather have, you know, trade up in this pick and grab, I don't know.
All right, bro. Let's
a top seven pick. And then get a grab top seven pick and trade up, and then somehow still trade up in this draft and still grab another 18 pick and grab Blake or Derek, grab Blake Lively instead of Derek, grab Derek, and I think it would be baller. I mean, I think we could get, you know, a big man that we can take time, because I do think Derek needs at least a year in the G League to be able to completely develop into that big man that we need, because what we need and what he is are very different right now. And it's just because, I mean, I'm not picking on Derek at all, but I've seen enough of his film to recognize that there's a lot of growth in his game that needs to happen. And he's going to find that in the G League. But that's why I feel like we picked Usman Jang, right, this last year as our project player for the G League. And I think that it would be cool if we had, you know, a Derek Lively for our project player for this next year.
So let's talk about Derek Lively the next episode, bro.
Okay.
Maybe let's cover him Monday. We'll do a fresh version of the mock draft, which is mostly you just telling us what you think is going to happen. I like it. Like, every now and then we changed up picks, but your mock draft is better. I haven't even seen Derek Lively yet, so that just showed you the limited
I look at any centers and big men first. That's the first thing I go to, is like, I like to scout big men up. And one of the reasons is because one of the most important things about big men is their motor. And that's just, I mean, that's the God honest truth about it, is that I've seen so many talented big men that don't have that motor, you know, like, and they could even be a great and they still didn't have a motor. And the reason that they're not one of the greatest of all time is because they didn't have that motor. And to me, like, I look at that motor as being one of the most important things to be putting yourself in one of the great in the generations. You know, Shea obviously has it. So for me, I look at big men and I'm like, I look at Chet, and that was the most impressive thing I watched about Chet. It was his motor. And I kept on saying it over and over. He's different. He's different because of his motor. And, you know, that's one of the things I've always said about Victor, is that, you know, maybe he can learn because still a young player. But that motor is something I've been concerned about. And how does it, you know, get under pressure? How does this, how does that, you know? And to me, I just, sometimes I want to take a step back and you know, highlight players. But when it comes to Derek, his motor is something that in some games I was like, damn. In some games I was like, where are you at? Like, where is he at? Like, and that's the thing that's concerning to me, is because a motor isn't something you can turn off and on. You know, in the NBA, it's got to be there, constant. And if you don't have it, you're about to get your ass handed to you. And it's the most, I mean, incredible thing if you watch a player. And I think of Nick Collison, man. Right? Man, that motor was always going. You know, like, he was everywhere. He might have not been the most talented player. He might have not done any of that shit. Right? But, dude, he could go. And he would go constantly. And every single time he was on that court, he gave it his all. And that's what you need in order to be able to be successful in the league. And if you, especially if you expect to be in the league for 10 plus years, you got to have that fucking motor. So for me, that's what I'm constantly looking at with big men, is where's your motor at? You know, like, developing big men, I would always say that. You know, we have one of our buddies, Rex Farmer. When he was, you know, 13 years old or 12 years old, and I was coaching him, and, you know, he was a college hooper, I would just be like, where's your motor? Grab your motor. Let's go. You know, and, like, I would always yell at him. And I remember one time someone comes up and is like, why are you always yelling at Rex about his motor? Because I was like, I'm going to train him how to have a motor, because that's the most important thing for a high school kid to have, a college kid to have. That's a big man. You know, if he could be 6'6" and he has a motor, he'll go to college someplace. It doesn't matter. And, I mean, he ended up being, like, what, 6'8"? Had a motor. went to college someplace. And that's the difference, man. You have to have a motor for a big man. And that's why I consistently look at these guys. I'm saying, can we teach this guy a motor? And that's why I look at Derek and I say, we could teach it to him, but he needs to go to the G League because those guys are masterful at that.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to it, bro. We'll do that and we'll get after it, man. Stay Daffy is saying Mavs might take Lively at 10. Who knows? Who the fuck Dude, knows?
The Mavs have more of a chance of trading their 10th pick. Let's just be honest. Mavs have a better chance of trading their 10th pick for another player than they will to draft it with it.
So let's talk about that. Like, there's the Mavs. There's also Portland, who suddenly find themselves with the number 3 pick. Are they in the same spot where they're unlikely to draft a player there? Or?
If a team comes up to Portland and says, we'll give you blank, you know, we'll give you blank for him. Or we'll give you blank for this 3rd pick. You know, like you have to, Damian Lillard is either somebody you're going to build around, right? And it's going to take veteran players to do so. Or you're going to trade Damian Lillard, right?
You think it's one of the two. You don't think you can take Scoot and then just make them work it out?
Well, I mean, like, if I was Portland, I would be calling the Los Angeles Lakers and being like, LeBron doesn't want to play there next year. You guys know that. Why don't you guys take my 3rd pick and we'll take LeBron over here?
Stop.
I mean, like, I'm just saying, like, there's certain things you can do with that pick because if you don't pit the right people around Damian Lillard, you're not going to get to the playoffs and you're not going to be able to do anything. So you're just wasting $100 million on Damian Lillard.
Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers situation with Scoot and Dame. I think just make them work it out. That's what I would do.
But that's the thing is that, like, there's so many teams that are finding themselves in the top 10 pick that you could say they don't want that pick because they would rather have a better player to go around their star player.
And Mwani's saying the same thing. It's like one of two options. But if I'm like, honestly, if I'm management
that's it.
For Portland, if I'm management for Portland, I'm thinking there's a third option.
But like, sure. I mean, you can shave your pubes.
Mm-hmm.
You can wax your pubes or you can pluck your pubes, man. I mean, you can do three different options and you can find and all of them are shitty. Right. My point is that like, yes, he's saying there has to be a third option here. But listen, there's elite players in this draft that people will say, I would like the number 3rd pick. I will give you blank player for that 3rd pick because you can start your rebuild with that.
Yeah, I right? can start if my I was rebuild the Lakers, with Scoot.
Well, if I mean, I was if Brandon Lakers Miller
gets picked 2. If it's, you know, if he's 3, yeah, whatever.
It's just this stuff is going there's to get crazy.
No
man.
Way.
Like,
I would.
I don't want to say, like, there's like 0% chance that a team picks up Damian Lillard for this or Damian Lillard for that. But like, I have to take a step back and look at the situation in Memphis. Look at these other situations that's going on. And if I'm Damian Lillard, I'm thinking I have a legit chance. I have a legit chance to go to a championship caliber team, or this team has to trade.
Make him demand the trade. That would be better for Portland to save face. And,
but like, listen, like I would love for Damian to be traded because they could get enough package back for him to rebuild right now. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they're starting their G League at all this year either. So being able to get a good return would be massive. I mean, that's what we're talking about is Damian staying or going. We're talking about Luka getting the right players around him or not. Like,
why does Dame keep talking about how he doesn't want more young players? I think that's really
But that's my point is that's why that pick is tradable right now because there has to be someone saying, "Look at my pick."
What pick number was Dame?
Ooh, 3 or 4 or 5. I don't know.
I feel like this number 7? 3 pick is more valuable than Dame.
But to the right people, man, right?
To the Trailblazers, I'm saying.
Listen,
he's picked 6th, okay?
If you were the Lakers, so would you take...
How do you say, we're just going to sacrifice the 3rd pick because the 6th pick from 11 years ago is saying he doesn't want to be around young players? Like, dude, they do this all the time in football where, like, the quarterback's like,
but
I want a receiver.
But he's saying that because he's forcing their hand.
Backup quarterback, and they're like,
but he's forcing
what
their hand.
Did you just do? Like, that's what you're supposed to do. That's how you say, like, your time is
over.
He
wants them. Commit to me.
Right.
or commit to the rebuild. Don't surround me with young players and try to teach them. I'm not doing that.
Okay.
That's what he's giving them the ultimatum without saying.
He's also playing this like this card of like, I want to spend my life in Portland. Like, that's what Portland needs. If you don't want to be around it, then demand a trade. Don't just act like the Portland management is going in a different direction and you're just gonna, like a fucking Jesus Christ sacrifice. No, you don't want to be a part of like the rebuild. That's fine, but you're getting paid a ridiculous amount of money for a team that is stuck. Like, to say they're in the middle is a compliment to them, because, but
that's what I'm saying. There's so many teams that are quote unquote in the middle that have a superstar. If they're looking at a rebuild right now, this is the time to do it because you can get a top three pick from the Portland Trail Blazers. Because either Damian Lillard's going to get a player around him to build around, or they're going to use that pick and say, goodbye, Damian, and we just got four picks for you.
That's what you
got
to do.
And that's the thing. That's what we're talking about. Like, there's no other choices there. I mean, you could say there's a third choice and say, well, Damian, we're going to put Scoot Henderson next to you, and you're going to train him. And then what? You have a dysfunctional superstar that's been leading your organization for a decade? Come on. You're not going to do that. Like, you're going to go far above that. You're going to do whatever it takes to not allow that to happen, because the second you do that, you devalue that player by two draft picks. Nobody is going to do that because he's worth four right now. Taking two for him because you made him dysfunctional is just fucking stupid. And we've seen teams do it.
I know, but I just, let's look at his contract, because that's like, I feel like...
Hold on one second.
Okay, so what? It's going to be $39 million, $42 million, $45 million, and then a player option. Okay, so he's actually going into his final 23-24 coming up, and then player exercise option. So he's got 2 years left. That's what... For me with Dame, if I'm Portland, I feel like I can get more trading him after this next year, because this contract is almost a negative. I don't know if they can get four picks like Dave is saying. When they're about to pay him $45 million, and then they're going to pay him $48 million. I think if he's going to, it seems like he's exercised that player option for just under $50 million. Like, maybe you can get somebody to pay that in an expiring situation. But I'll ask Dave right now. Dave, they're about to pay him $45 million, and then he has a player option for $48 million. So just under $50 million. And my question is this, like, if he's like, I want to be traded, and there's 2 years left, like...
Still valuable.
He's still valuable, but is he more valuable with 1 year left? Like, when it's about to be expiring. And that's where I look at Portland might just say, like, stick it out for 1 year, even though you don't want to.
Yeah, but I hear you, but... What happens if Damian gets injured again?
Gets Lillard again. Yeah, it happens every year. Again. But here's the thing.
You know, like, what happens if that, then his value goes from, and then you get two picks for him.
But, okay, give him
for an extra
give
year.
Him a cush situation.
Dude, but listen, if I was sitting here at number 10, if I'm Dallas, I'm sitting at number 10, I'm calling them and saying, what's going on? Because I can build a team with Dylan Brooks, Damian Lillard, and, you know, like, this is the part. Like, there's so many things that could happen between now and draft day. And even after draft day starts, like, there's moving trades are going to be happening all the time, because they're going to be trying to pair up superstars, and they're going to be trying to move these top three picks or top 10 picks, because they're going to be like, I need a player to go around Luka, not to try to rebuild, because these players that are this year are 19 years old. I mean, we don't have any like 22 year olds that are out this year.
Yeah, they're pretty young.
So it's a rebuild class. That's it. So teams are going to be trying to get out of it. And that's where the Oklahoma City Thunder could be sitting back and facilitate some situation and sitting and wrap up in a 18th or 19th pick because of it. Just by facilitating money.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this game coming up tomorrow. We won't be live recording tomorrow or anything. So make our predictions now, bro. I know who I'm picking. You want me to go first? You go first.
Yeah, bro. You do it.
All right, man. The Heat are going to get this done. Game two. Tie the series up, and it's going to shock everybody, because then they're going to start feeling feelings about how maybe the Nuggets aren't about to walk away with this with a sweep. What do you think, bro?
I think Nuggets are going to get done at their home. I'll be honest with you. I just think that Nuggets are feeling it. Last episode, I said it had been years since a team that wasn't Texas
too, the real numbers.
Or West or Lake or not Texas or Los Angeles
or
team.
California.
California, too. Thank you. A California or Texas team that hasn't, or that was a West team that, you know, won didn't it. Win the championship.
Yeah, that finally won it. It was what? Woo! Your picture
missed
fell
my
down.
Head, bro.
It's like
missed my head, bro.
It's a sign.
We had an accident outside front right now, so that's why I ran upstairs because there was an accident there.
Oh, really?
So the whole house is rattling because there's a fire truck in front of our house.
Oh, okay, so the year was 79. It was
1979,
Sonics, I believe, dude.
Yeah,
that's what he said.
Think about that. It's almost been, well, it's been 40 plus years. You know, like that's just insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't even like.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what we're talking about. So, you know, Denver's feeling it right now. So unless the Heat come out,
punch them
in
the
mouth,
do
something.
Dude.
So,
dude, I think they will. I think they've got to figure some things out. They know that they tried some different things defensively. They didn't work.
Yeah.
They're gonna come up with a new strategy and. Like, look, there are some players in the NBA, in NBA history, that no matter what you did, you could not stop them. And yeah. We get to find out if Jokic is one of those players, because there's going to be some crazy attempts to figure out ways to stop him coming up from Eric Spoelstra in the Heat. So it's going to be fun.
Well, and you said something last time, and we had a listener. So KG had said, and I'd seen it too, that he was going to pick up Joker full court, right? If he played against him. And I want to make this clear, all right, guys? Old ballers, whether you're a legend or not, are like old fishermen, okay, guys? When they tell you they caught a 90-pound fish on a 6-pound test line, they're bullshitting you, all right? KG, and not in a million years, would he pick up Joker full court for 48 minutes. He would pick him up half court, right? And then for the fourth quarter, he would pick him up full court, all right? That's how KG would guard him. That's how he did it his entire career. He was a baller like that, but never would he go 48 minutes balls to the wall, especially in a 7-game series like that. He would create so much issues for himself. And again, big fish, 90-pound test line, or no, 6-pound test line. You know, you got to take a deep breath and recognize KG was saying what he wanted to do. But reality is that ain't no way he's going to put out 48 minutes of guarding someone full court.
But you got to be creative. You've got to change it up. You've got to make them, you know, do stuff that they're not comfortable with. And then as soon as they get comfortable with it, change what you're doing. And it's got to be like a repeat of this strategy that you execute all game long, all series long, knowing that some games he's going to get 50. Some games he's going to have 20 assists and 20 rebounds. Like, there's just not a lot you can do to limit like the totality of his game. But NBA players, NBA teams, they have the ability, if they focus on certain things, they can take those things away. And you have to decide what you want to take away. And my number one thing I'm trying to take away with Jokic is passing. I don't want him to become like the best playmaker on the court. I want him to be the best scorer if I'm on the other team. Make him be the thing that he doesn't want to be.
But the one thing you can't really do is stop his passing, because he's so big and he uses his body so well. Like, it's almost the one thing that you can't stop him doing.
The mistake is to send a double team, because then you automatically create an unbalanced floor. And as soon as that happens, the skip pass is just, it's so lethal in the NBA.
Hmm.
It's the most important pass. And he passes the best cross-court pass out of any big in the league. I think Luka does it best out of any player. Definitely, it's a skill that if you don't have, then teams are going to find a way to limit your effectiveness no matter what.
There's definitely a top echelon of passers in the
especially
league.
Especially when it comes to that, like sensing a double team and getting the ball out. Like it goes the way Jokic does it, makes Shaq look like a bumbling fool. But even Shaq, that's what he had to do. Here comes the double team, and they'd force him to pass out, and they, you know, get the ball into rotation and find an open shooter. Like, that's the whole thing. That's the whole game. That's what they've just found out Jokic is by far the best in the world at. He's the best player in the world, but, like, when it comes to that, like, I think they said going into the fourth quarter, he had 5 shot attempts. Like, that's literally playing into his hands. Like,
yeah.
There's no, like, if you were to say the perfect game plan for most players, yeah, limit them to 5 attempts in the first 3 quarters. That's good. But with Jokic, Jokic is like, I've got you exactly where I want you. Now I'm going to eat you.
And that's what's beautiful about his game. Like, I think that's what, like, watching everybody sit here and say the transition from this being a center league to a forward and center league to a guard league, right? You look at guys like Joker and you're saying, well, you know, this guy has way more game. You know, like, he's what everybody wishes that they could do. As simple as that. They wish they could be, you know, fat and chunky, you know, not, you know, an incredible ability to dunk, but affects the game. And this is why a player like him can play for 20 years, is because it's not hard on his body. I mean, yeah, it's hard, but it's not going to be as hard as these guys that are, you know, like Vince Carter was able to do what he was able to do. But yeah, man, his knees will never, and hips will be horrible because of it. His back, horrible. So I look at somebody like Joker and I say, yeah, this is exactly the type of player that you want in your organization for, you know, 20, you know, 2 decades essentially. And he's going to be like that Sabonis of sorts, being able to completely, you know, what's the original Sabonis?
Ardenas, I don't know how to say.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got that type of style and play that proves that it doesn't matter when it's used. In the, you know, it could be in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, 2020s. It's going to be successful because that's how domination of the game works, is that if you can take your player, create a one-on-one situation, force a double team, and then find the open man because you know where everybody's playing and your IQ is out of this world, you dominate everything. And Joker is no exception. He is going to be looked at as one of the greatest of this generation because of his ability. And people are like, he should have gotten his third MVP this year. Well, that third MVP is coming. His fourth MVP is coming. Like, he's going to be known as a generational player. And a lot of people are just going to look back and recognize that, you know, like, second round picks can be that impactful.
He's going to have to get his first chip first. No skipping steps, bro.
No skipping steps, I know. But on the same sense is that if he comes out there and continues to do what he's doing while on prime time, like, he's going to get that many more votes this next year. And it's going to take a season that is, you know, replicating a Michael Jordan season or, you know, some crazy, insane season for him not to get that. The only reason he didn't get this MVP this year is because he didn't average a triple-double. If he averaged that triple-double, I think he would have got it.
I don't know what he averaged, but didn't he average a triple-double last year or something like that?
No.
I thought he did, bro.
Russ is the only guy that's averaged a triple-double.
You sure about that?
Yeah. There was really close. He was really, really close to those numbers this year.
Okay. I feel like silly for not actually knowing the answer, but yeah, dude. Career stats. You're right. 9.8 assists.
He was almost right there, man. There. It was so close.
Dude, that's unbelievably close. Because the rebounds were 11.8. That's not even close at all.
But that's the thing. If he was there, he would have got his third MVP in a row because the only way that he was going to do it is being so much spectacularly better than he was the year before. And as averaging a triple-double for a big man,
yeah,
it's like a fucking unicorn and a horse humping, creating a whole new – or you can even say a unicorn and cow fucking.
Creating a
And it's deck-a-corn. The offspring of that.
They create a deck-a-corn. And then just like humps everywhere. There's so many fucking points, bro. Anyway, sit Thanks, on that man. For a little while, everybody. We'll be back.
See you guys later.
Monday. Enjoy your weekend.